This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, Australia. Welcome to My Millennial Money. I'm Glenn James. Today on the episode, we are talking with Balaji Gopal. He's the head of personal investor at Vanguard, and we'll get into a bit of all that stuff and what the platform is, a bit about Vanguard for those who might not know of Vanguard, and we're going to answer a heap of listener questions. Before we do get into the podcast, in the spirit of transparency, I just want to disclose a couple of things. I did a YouTube review of the Vanguard Personal Investor. That review that I did on YouTube, that was not paid by Vanguard. I personally hold units in the Vanguard Diversified High Growth Fund, and this episode is actually brought to you by Vanguard today. Balaji, welcome to My Millennial Money. Thanks for your time today.
No worries. It's great to be here.
You ready to have a chat and get down and dirty?
Let's get into it.
All right. Let's set the scene of today's episode. I'll get Balaji to tell us a little bit about Vanguard. I want to talk about recent market volatility. And it's interesting, Balaji, like, it's almost as an investor, volatility is the new norm, isn't it, these days? Like, it's just wild.
Absolutely. And there's so many things that are driving market volatility. That's even before the Ukraine war began. There was inflation, there was pre-COVID, during COVID, post-COVID, the vaccination impacts. Yeah, there's so many things that are happening. And I don't know how investors make sense of it all.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can help today. For those who don't know Vanguard, let me go a different angle. Like, you've worked at Vanguard for some time. You're likely to be an investor yourself in Vanguard. What would you say you're most proud of with Vanguard and investing?
Well, I've got a little bit of a story here, Glenn. I actually came to Vanguard as a client. Before I came to Vanguard, I was a client of Vanguard. I worked in one of the big banks, and we did a big, long partnership with Vanguard, who are already managing a lot of our money for our super funds and our advisors. So I knew Vanguard then, and then eventually decided to move into Vanguard. And thankfully, Vanguard were accepting of me joining of Vanguard, which has been great. So I've been here for 5 years. But I'm most proud of Vanguard is all the things we knew about Vanguard before I joined Vanguard are still true. It's a large firm, but fundamentally two most things I'm really, really proud of at Vanguard, and which really distinguishes us, even while as an employee or a crew member who works here, is it's this whole investor first ethos. And that's not a catchphrase, that's not a tagline, that's not something we just come up with. It's essentially everything we do is baked into that. And Vanguard globally, or predominantly in the US, is structured as a mutual structure, which means our funds own Vanguard, and investors in fund by extension own Vanguard. So we don't have any external shareholders. We're not listed on any stock market. We're not subject to these quarterly, half-yearly cycles where someone and some analysts are breathing down your neck to try and produce more financial results. So our structure in many ways enables us to be that truly customer-centric, because essentially our customers are our owners.
Wow. And, you know, it did start in America, the company. Does that mean, you know, Vanguard obfuscates Australian laws if there are investors in Australia? Like, how does that work?
No, we are very much incorporated in Australia,
right,
as Vanguard Investments Australia. We've got about 830 or 850 people who work here, and that number keeps going up substantially. We benefit from the global scale and all of the assets that are produced in the US, but we're very much located here. Many of our products are almost all of our products are incorporated locally for Australian investors as well.
Yeah, right. Now, your kind of remit with the Vanguard Personal Investor, which is effectively a platform for Vanguard investors, like, that's kind of your domain in the retail space. I wanted to just talk on quickly, like, you mentioned earlier, like, you did work with financial advisors, and, you know, when I was a financial advisor, I'd recommended Vanguard products. So you guys aren't anti-financial advice?
Not at all. We're very pro-financial advice.
Yeah, yeah. And just for everyone who doesn't know, because I've talked about this on various episodes before, but talk to me about the Vanguard Advisor Alpha that you guys, I guess you commissioned a report and you talked about this Advisor Alpha.
Yeah, Vanguard's Advisor Alpha program was, it began in the US. It was a proposition that we took to advisors in the US to talk about the fact about where advisors can actually add value with their clients and how to demonstrate that value. And we were also seeing both here and globally a lot of trends where advisors were, trying to double up as investment managers and running portfolios and things like that. We found that advisors play a very crucial role in terms of that behavioral coaching, the nudging, and just taking their clients on that journey of how to think about their wealth. The investment management, the portfolio management aspects of it were better done elsewhere, whereas the role of an advisor, and I'd love your perspective as an ex-advisor, is really, telling people how to think about it, holding them true to the right belief systems, not making sure that clients or investors don't act inappropriately or react to adverse market movements. Yeah, I think the role of an advisor is pretty significant, and we think advice has value. We're fundamental believers that in the role of financial advice. We've even done some work where if you have a goal of getting up to $1 million with an advisor, you're about $160,000 better off in getting to that goal than if you were to try and do it yourself.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Because it's so counterintuitive. And I think because financial advice, and this isn't an episode about, financial advice, but we've dug a hole anyway, so I'll continue. But like, I'm pro-professional help when the need arises in my life.
Absolutely.
Whether it's an ongoing thing where I see my hygienist and my dentist every 6 months, or whether it's a solicitor that I need to help read a contract every second, third year, or a physio or a surgeon, I'm pro professional help when and as needed. Now, I think the biggest confusing factor that is out there in the, we'll just say in the real world Australia, is that financial advisors are there to absolutely just get you the best return and beat the market and all that. And that's so far from the truth.
Absolutely.
And I would say a good financial advisor will sit down with you, look at your goals, help you put a plan in place, keep you accountable to those goals. Oh, by the way, we'll plug in some product that might help. By the way, we'll plug in an investment solution that might help. By the way, we'll let you know if anything comes up in the federal budget that absolutely affects you and your situation. It doesn't have to be forever. It can be for a period of time.
Yeah.
But Balaji, it's funny. Like, I always think, why the heck does Roger Federer need a coach if he's one of the best in the world?
Yeah, that's a great way of thinking about it.
Like, that's counterintuitive. That's ridiculous. But it is that third-party accountability. It's someone to look in from a different angle. Roger can't see the back of his head while he's serving, right?
So, exactly.
So, yeah, I just wanted to say loud and clear, we are pro professional help when and if needed and when and as needed.
That's right. And it also advisors play a critical role of showing you the mirror in terms of some of your recent behaviors and also holding you true to, hey, this is what you said and now you're doing something different. Has something changed? And and it's always good when someone else whose only role is to make sure you are going towards your goals is doing that. Yeah. But to your point, professional help is really important when you need it.
Yeah. And you might be listening to this and you might invest in, one of the Vanguard funds at the moment and you're just shoveling money in and it's all good. Well, if it's all good, it's all good.
Yep.
But if you do come to a strategic crossroad and you need some numbers crunched or a little bit of accountability to get to a goal for a little bit of time, that's awesome. Yep. I think it needs to be a hygiene factor that you do see an advisor who, you're comfortable with, there's good reviews, they've got, the heart of a teacher, they're not just there to sell something, they might have a flat ongoing fee, they don't take a percentage clip because I don't like that vibe. And it's okay to pay for help. And if you're getting value, that's okay.
Yep.
But if you want to do it yourself, that's okay as well.
Yep.
So, anyway, so that kind of gets you out of this whole, I need to be a stock picker, I need to time the market, I just want to look at my goals. And I've said this before on the podcast, like, as an investor, your primary goal, I believe, is to choose quality underlying investment, focus on your job, on your career, focus on living on less than what you earn, and shoveling as much money into your investments for the long term.
Oh, do you know what? There's we have a group within Vanguard called the Investment Strategy Group. They do a ton of research on everything. They're responsible for putting our diversified portfolios together and everything else.
Should have bloody got them on the podcast. What are you doing here?
Some of the research they did was just particularly in a lowish return environment moving forward, the impact of investor action, the ability to save more, the ability to continue to invest had a far greater impact on your overall portfolio in the long term than any sort of market timing or security selection, which I thought was really interesting, because you always think things are more sophisticated, but like sometimes it just comes down to saving more, investing more, and like actions I can take to, if I'm continuing to invest, you know, when I get a pay rise, when I get a bonus, am I topping it up, and am I putting that money away? And those habits have such an outsized impact than any market movement. So that to me was quite staggering.
And it's funny, like, and you know, I've got a heap of questions here that I want to ask you, and I will, but like, if I drill down, because this podcast, it's all about encouraging people to be the best version of them, to do better, to do the you of tomorrow a favor today. Like, okay, question. You look like a lean, fit type of guy. Do you exercise in your daily life or anything like that?
Not as much as I would like, but yes, I do.
You do? Okay. So what type of exercise do you enjoy doing?
I love running.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just something that takes me away from the daily grind. And and it's just, I'm lost in my own thoughts.
Yeah. I would encourage you and anyone listening, like, next time you're running, have a think about the concepts of momentum. Have a think about the concepts of just showing up. Have a think about the days that you can't be bothered to run and you're like, I'm just going to get out there. 10 minutes is better than 10 minutes of not running.
Yeah.
And these correlations with personal fitness, if you had the column of personal fitness and personal finance investment habits, you could remove the labels of the top and you couldn't tell the difference between the two.
Yep.
And this is just fascinating, isn't it? Because I've changed my mindset as an investor myself that I just need to focus on generating money and investing it to grow wealth.
Yep.
Like, that's my thing. That's all I'm doing. I'm not overcooking it. And selfishly, me doing this podcast gives me the personal accountability week on week to keep doing that. And that's why, like, I get in the Facebook group, I get in other Facebook groups and calls trauma and all that. I'm not in the Facebook groups and the chats and all that as Glenn James, the host of My Millennial Money. I'm in there as Glenn, just some guy who wants to be encouraged with investing. If I can just go a little bit further with the mindset around investing and habits and whatnot. Actually, I don't know if I've shared this much before, but just recently, last year in COVID, I had wrist surgery, right? And went to the hospital, and before my surgery, they took my blood pressure. And they're like, you got high blood pressure, don't worry, it's just white coat fever or whatever they call it. And I'm like, trust me, I live for operations. I've like had like 12
procedures.
I've
never heard anyone say that.
You know what I mean? I'm like, they've got my file at the hospital already, Gosford Private's already a big thing. I'm like, I'm as chill. I'm not nervous. It's not white coat or whatever. And they're like, yeah, whatever. It's all good. They go, just go to your GP, get it sorted. Went to the GP. Yep, high blood pressure. He's like, well, move your ass, lose some weight, get moving. And then got the machine at home and was measuring my blood pressure, you know, a couple times a week. Similar, like as an investor, we might have a look at our portfolio. couple of times of whenever.
Yep.
And just monitor, just, you know. But the whole thing was I changed my mindset from needing to exercise to quote-unquote lose weight, to go to the gym to quote-unquote lose weight. I changed my mindset to just go with the outcome of good health.
Yeah.
And my blood pressure has dropped back down just from good health.
That's great. Just defining it in a different context also
makes all the pressure off.
It takes all the pressure off.
Yeah. So if we look at that list of good money habits, good investing habits, good health, good fitness habits, it doesn't matter what the title is because all the mindset things are exactly the same. So if you're freaking out about, I don't have money to invest this week, that's all good because you're an investor. Oh, I've only got $10 to put over to my account this week. Better than $10 in that account than $10 on the lounge.
Yep. It's you make a great point. I was reading this book called Atomic Habits.
Oh, we love that book here.
That is a fantastic book. I love one line from that book amongst many other lines. It basically said, it's not just enough about having goals. You don't rise to the level of your goals. You fall to the level of your systems and habits. And that to me was just quite profound because it's very easy to just say, hey, I want to do a Boston Marathon and I want to do it in a certain time. But unless I've got some habits of training, I'm never going to get there to even qualify, let alone do it. So yeah, it was just the importance of our habits and what we are willing to do and to be able to sit back and ignore the noise is so critical.
Well, it's setting the habit as the goal, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And, you know, when we look at our investing, I know, and I've disclosed that I invest in Vanguard products, I know that they will take care of the investing for me. I'm not a freaking fund manager.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need 50 different single stocks. I just need to live my freaking life over here, enjoy life, have a good lifestyle. By the way, I'm an investor for the long term.
Yeah.
Like we overcook it so much and we don't have to.
No, we don't. And it's interesting when people, we at Vanguard, we've got this thing called principles of investing, foundations of investment principles. We serve about 30 million clients. We've looked at all of the patterns of how people invest and come up with essentially...
You got 30 million clients.
30 million clients globally. A big chunk of them in the US.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, our strategy moving forward is we don't want to be serving large institutions. Our strategy very, very explicitly and deliberately moving forward is to be there for end investors and the advisors who serve them and work with them. And we're very clear about even with the advisors, we want advisors who are philosophically aligned to Vanguard's way of thinking. So if you are an advisor who is trying to invest your client's wealth into, you know, property development and things like that, I'm just using that as an example. They're probably not the kind of advisors we would want. But we, in Australia, we started our advisor practice maybe in late 90s. Now we're at this point where, you know, about 60% of all advisors in Australia have at least a dollar invested in Vanguard products. And the reason why I say that is all advisors are doing is essentially just coaching their clients to build those great habits that you just described and the product, and whether it's a diversified product or an index product or an active product for that matter, that does the job for them. But what an advisor does is just, you know, reinforcing these good habits for these investors.
I, at the risk of causing your PR and marketing team to have a significant medical event, I won't get you to comment on this, but I saw an opinion piece or something in the AFR, and I think it came out of the States, and they're like, oh, Vanguard, they're losing their way, blah, blah, blah. You may have seen it in recent weeks. And someone actually asked in the Facebook group, they said, oh, can you ask them about that? And I was like, I actually replied in the group. I said, no, I'm not going to ask them about that because from me looking in, the actions speak louder than words. The fact that Vanguard wanted to connect with My Millennial Money and run an ad campaign, we're for retail investors. The fact that Vanguard have removed superannuation fund mandates in Australia.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about their super product coming soon, guys. We'll talk about it. But the fact that you are moving from this institutional thing back to this retail thing,
yep,
is actually the quite opposite of what the opinion piece said. So you don't have to comment on that. You can if you want. Give me a wink if you want to move on or whatever.
No, I'll answer that question. Look, as a...
Sorry, Megan.
retail businesses are incredibly capital intensive, resource intensive. You can't just launch something, do something and flip it. And Vanguard is very serious about this retail mandate. Obviously, in the US, we have a sizable presence. It's a very well-known brand there. In Australia, that's growing, largely through advisors and also a growing number of retail clients. I think our strategy, not just in Australia, but all regions outside of the US have a very strong mandate to grow our retail presence. And that for all of, whether it's Europe, whether it's Canada, Australia, Asia, that's very clearly our way forward. So you won't see us serving very large institutions. And the reason for that is very simple, because we want investors to have really good outcomes at the end of their journey through this whole investor-centric and a low-cost approach. The challenge with doing it in a very intermediated scale is sometimes investors were not being better off. And fundamentally, that's really what's driven us to go direct. Mm. And also because our founder, Jack Bogle, who started Vanguard 46 years ago, was very much designed the firm, the structure, and the low-cost ethos with an end investor in mind. So when Warren Buffett comes out and says, Jack Bogle's done more than anyone for American investors, there's a lot of truth in that, because that whole retail focus was there right from the beginning. It's pretty astounding. But for us, we're here for the very long term. We will continue to invest for the benefit of the retail investor, whether they come in through our funds, through our ETFs, or our direct superannuation offer that we're looking to offer. And we'll talk about that in a second. Mm. Retail and advisor is really our focus moving forward.
And it's fascinating. Like when I actually... we had a coffee here. Was it the start of this year or the end of last year? Either way.
End of last year.
And I dropped in and had a coffee with you, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, I'll go to the Vanguard office, and there's bloody like 700 people, I think you said, that work in Vanguard Australia. I'm like, okay, so you're not a startup.
No.
Which is all a G. Hey, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We might talk about some market volatility and what Vanguard can do, and then we'll get into these listener questions.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
We're back, baby. Back and badder than ever. Now, Balaji. Man, the world's just wild out there, isn't it? And every freaking investment chart is a jagged sword of wildness.
Yeah.
So, what can Vanguard do in this climate of market volatility? And as I said at the start, I think it's the new norm. Isn't it? If it's not COVID, it's a war. If it's not a war, it's inflation. If it's not an inflation thing,
it's a crash of something.
It's a crash of something.
It's a boom of something else.
Yeah.
Our guidance to investors, and we obviously, as a large investment firm, have a view on things like this in terms of how to make sense of it all as a large investment manager. But from our perspective, we're not trying to time these markets. That's not what Vanguard does. We're not saying now is the time to get into emerging markets or get out. That is not what we do. From our standpoint, we look at the impact of large events on markets and how do we make sense of it in the very long term, not in the short to medium term. We might come up with return expectations for, say, US equities or Australian equities in the medium or the long term. But our overarching guidance to investors is market events will happen from time to time. There is never going to be a period where market events don't happen. The journalism industry is also built upon writing about everything. You've got a huge rise in journalists who will write about things. Some of it is in reaction to what's happening in markets. Other articles might cause market events in themselves. No one person or no one firm really knows what's truly happening in markets. And our view to investors is, and I'll say this from the perspective of, I worked in sophisticated investment teams in the past. People running, you know, large, very large portfolios, very high net worth portfolios, ultra high net worth portfolios. I don't think anyone knows. Everyone tries to make sense or interpret what's happening in markets. Our guidance to investors is just stick and stay true to your plan. I mean, we spoke about investing habits. It's really important that what are you trying to achieve in your goal? And if you're trying to just put all the money away and have no specific goal in mind, then just you adversely reacting to market movements is not going to put you in good stead. As we've seen time and again, the GFC, with COVID, with the tech crash, when people think they can time markets, that often blows up in their face. Because if you really think about it, if you're trying to time markets, you've got to get two things right. You've got to know when to get in, and you've got to know when to get out, or the opposite. Mm. And most people, and I rate even sophisticated investors in this mix, they can't get that right. So your best way is to stay true to your plan, stay diversified, don't pay too much money to run your investments. And the most important thing is to just be focused. Stick to your habits, because your habits are going to put you in far better stead than any sort of you market timing activities. And this is also proven and backed by our own research. And we've seen, by virtue of being responsible for the retail business now in Vanguard, and we've had some very long-standing investors who've been with us. You look at some of
these. One of them is a freaking pest in the Facebook group, isn't he? Yeah.
they're all good investors. But if you look at
that was just a sly shout out. He knows who he is, and you know him as well.
We love all our investors. You look at some of these very high balance clients who are, you know, more mature, more older now. Mm. All they've done is just continued to stick to a plan of investing, never took their money out when markets are going up or down. They just kept investing, and they've got massive million-dollar or multi-million-dollar portfolios now. And I just think that's there's so much sense in that. We don't see too many of our investors reacting adversely to market movements. We published some research recently just on what we're seeing on Vanguard Personal Investor, and we saw a big 64% rise in new investors coming in, and we saw a massive rise in investors just putting more and more money into their portfolios. So I think that's great to see, and we think so long as you're diversified and you're sticking to your good investing habits, I think that alone should be enough. And I would say there's a lot of other reasons to be worried about everything that's happening in the world. Focus on what you can control and focus on sticking to your habits.
Yeah, totally. And I'll just, you can see me writing down a few things here. This whole concept is outsourcing things that you don't need to do yourself.
Yep.
For a good benefit. And I've written down a list here, and I mentioned some of them earlier. These are things in my life that I outsource to professionals. Now, some of these things, you listening, you won't outsource. You'll do yourself, mm-hmm. and you'll get a just as good outcome to do yourself. But other things you'll outsource,
yep.
because you actually suck at it and you don't know what you're freaking doing. So I outsource my physio, my dental, my car mechanic. I outsource my lawns and my cleaning. Now, you might go, well, I can do my cleaning and my lawns myself. I can save money and just get a good job. Awesome. Do that. I don't. I outsource my investing. I outsource my accounting. I don't do my tax myself. So it's this spectrum, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like just outsource your investing and you just focus on doing you. That's my message today. Sorry to hijack your podcast, Balaji, but that's my message today.
it's absolutely, and it's a great, I look at that list And the one thing that separates investing is like, investing is one thing where you could pay more and get a better physio. You could pay more, get more, a better cleaner. But with investing, it's quite funny because the more you pay, often the worse off you are, because more of your money is not working for you. And if you're looking at, investing is one which is, it's quite ironic because you'd think that, you know, you need all this massive skill and to pick these amazing stocks. Look, there are fund managers around the world, don't get me wrong. There's a very small handful of fund managers who've, like a Warren Buffett, who've consistently done exceptionally well, but they're fewer and far between. It's very hard to pick them. But investing, for the most part, needs to be low-cost investing. You've got to have more of your money working for you in a low-cost, diversified portfolio. And that's maybe a subtext to do your message of the day today.
Yeah, and I think, like, I'm looking at this, like, investing has risk, right? And we know diversification by having a one-stop-shop portfolio. And, you know, on your – and Balaji said to me, I'm not getting too producty and salesy on this podcast, but I am for 1 second. Like, Vanguard might have a diversified portfolio, like VDHG, VDGR and all that stuff, or you might have a build-your-own-adventure, different ETFs, right? I think there's a risk to diversification and you're being overweight in an asset class, you haven't rebalanced and – you'll get portfolio drift. So, you know, because realistically, a balanced portfolio that's diversified, when it is rebalanced, it will take some of the growth out of the growth assets, put it back into the defensive portion, give you a smoother return. But when we look at investing concepts, if there's an active concept and a passive or index concept, my question that I've been asking myself lately is, I'm actually okay with index slash market returns. Mm-hmm. And you actually just add more risk if you go active, and I've got a couple of active funds, you add risk. And the question is, can you be okay with market returns? And on balance, I am okay with market returns. I don't need the risk for most of my wealth.
Yeah. Well, the flip side is you pay a lot of money to get above market returns.
But there's a risk that it won't happen.
And it won't happen and you've paid more.
Yeah.
And then more of that money is not working for you. So you're going to not only be below market returns, but when you add that cost, you're even worse off than had you just stayed in a low cost product. And this is why the whole concept of low cost is so important, because the more you pay, you don't always get a phenomenal outcome. Hey, just on the diversification and the active stuff. We see a ton of this is literally the only time I will talk about our products, but
yeah.
It's less about the products, but more about how and why the style of product is so critical. We believe in diversification, and diversification is such an important component of it. And you touched on rebalancing. We've got, you know, since the late 90s, this suite of diversified funds, like a high growth, a balanced, and a conservative. And people invest in it depending on the stage of life they're at. Diversification is important because these portfolios are a one-stop shop where you get access to US equities, global equities, Australian equities, a little bit of bonds, a little bit of hedging. It's a fully diversified portfolio in one mix. And the product is designed based on our investing principles of having clear goals, staying diversified, keeping the cost low, and staying disciplined. And I'll talk about diversification with a few examples because it's so critical. Typically, because all of our funds are in net inflow territory, there's more money coming into these funds, which means that gets allocated. I'm talking about how funds management works.
Yeah. I think it's important to dig on and explain that.
Absolutely. So with these funds, they're largely in net inflow territory, so we'll just allocate that across the asset classes. So all investors in the fund are always getting that diversified exposure. You touched on rebalancing, and that's an important one. I mean, because of the nature of our funds and being in inflow territory, we don't really have to do massive rebalance trades in these funds year on year. We might do maybe 3 to 4 substantial ones. But it's important because in COVID last March, I think we did about 5 to 7 rebalance trades in the 1 month, more so than we would do in 1 year. And if you really think about rebalancing, it's so goes against an investor psyche and an investor psychology, because what you're doing is, when things are going down, you're allocating more money towards it. And when things are going up, you're essentially, you know, taking away and allocating to things, you know, to the other asset class. What we find is most investors are not geared to do this by themselves. Mm. Whereas having it in a diversified portfolio construct, the rebalancing is done for you automatically, depending on whatever happens in markets. So you don't have to worry about it. And again, to your earlier point, don't worry about how this is, how people are rebalancing and doing things, because it's already happening within these products. Focus more on just being able to contribute more, being able to save more, put more away. So I think that's an important one, because it's all the more relevant in the context of the market volatility you've spoken about. And the diversification is so, so critical to make whatever happens in markets to work for what is important to you as an investor.
Mm, yeah, fascinating. Let's get on to some questions. Now, I aggregated these questions because there was some common themes. So I'm not going to say, you know, David asks this. So I've just kind of aggregated them, everyone. But one thing actually I will say, because I remember and I know her, she's a fan of the podcast. She's a listener. Her name's Alyssa. She lives in Hobart. She's Canadian. Alyssa. She's awesome. Can you get the bloody statements out on time?
Look, it's an absolutely fair point. We will always prioritize accuracy because if you really think about it, a statement is the only tangible component of our products. Last year, the last financial year, there were some delays, and I take that on board. This is going to be one of the biggest focuses for this year, to just make sure that the whole statement generation cycle happens a lot quicker and we can get it out in time. So yeah, Alyssa, sorry about last year. We'll try and do a better job this year for you.
There you go. They're trying. They really are. And your whole level, what are we on, 26 here or something?
13.
13. They're probably like, who's yelling in the room in the corner? But that's just me yelling. okay, there's a question here. Basically said, how can we pick the right Vanguard ETF / managed fund for our goals?
Yeah, we touched on it a few times today about, it all comes down to the four things, four investment principles: having goals, being diversified, you know, keeping your costs low, and staying disciplined and staying the course. We think you have two options. You could do this yourself by, you know, taking an Australian equities product, a global equities product, whether it's a fund or an ETF, we're agnostic. You can blend that together. Or you could consider what many of our both retail investors and advised investors just do, is choose our diversified products, the VDAGs, the VDGRs, whether it's a fund or an ETF. If it's an ETF, you can buy a complete diversified portfolio as if you're buying a share on any stock exchange or directly through Vanguard Personal Investor. But we think the diversified options are a great way if you don't have any specific views in terms of what you want, and if you don't want to spend too much time trying to rebalance between yourselves, it's all done for you in this one-stop shop way. And there's some of our most popular products, and we've seen some of our wealthiest investors, as well as those who are starting out, just go straight into these diversified products. We're doing a lot more work to put some information out there on our public website to make sure that whether you're a beginner investor or whether you're a seasoned investor, that we make it clear for you in terms of how to go about your investing journey and what are the types of things you need to know, and the importance of diversification. But diversified funds and ETFs for us are a great mechanism for anyone. If you don't have a particular view, just go into those. Would be of course, there is no financial advice here, but these are from a self-directed as well as advised book. These are just simple alternatives.
It's funny. I was on Goodreads last night, which is a website for like hardcore book people, and looking at reviews of my own book, right? Because I use Vanguard examples.
Yep.
Because it was funny. Actually, I think I said the word spank me sideways. They say what's on the box, and because your balance fund is literally balanced at 50 growth, 50 defensive.
Yep.
And I actually called that out in the book, and I use the example of the Vanguard Diversified Growth Fund, which is a 70% allocation to growth.
Yeah.
Anyway, this reviewer was like, oh, and they just used Vanguard through the book. I hope he's getting a commission out of it. I'm like, no, I'm not. But I will take your money if you want to give me money. But it's just, read my book. Like, honestly, if you wondering what to invest in your own situation, you need to understand how portfolios are built and how asset classes work together. Like, it's as simple as that. Education around how the structural components of a portfolio works, coupling with, well, I need to save up for something in 2 years' time. Well, we're not investing anyway.
Yeah.
But if it's over 5 years, I would hypothesize it's at least a Vanguard Diversified Growth Fund, which is a 70% investment. And that is absolutely not personal financial advice. It's general advice, everyone. So, generally speaking.
Hey, can I just add one thing to that particular reader's comments? Right from when Vanguard began in 1975, one thing Jack Bogle did and was very, very, very particular on was not to pay for distribution.
Right.
So no commissions.
Right.
We would never pay anyone to just recommend our products. Even this interaction we're having is more, we're trying to build awareness. Because Vanguard, to those who know us well, but as part of just being a very strong retail-oriented strategy moving forward, we want to build awareness of who Vanguard is and what we stand for. And in the investment in My Millennial Money is again an extension of that. We're not here to spruik our products. It's more of a way of investing, the low cost, long term way of thinking. And that's, I just wanted to say that because and this conversation should be an open conversation.
Well, it is, and like I'm as transparent as I can be. And if I thought your product and your company was crap, you wouldn't be on this microphone. Like, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, there's no specific weird links in the show notes that we're tracking people. Like,
no,
it's seriously above the line awareness.
Absolutely.
I've got nothing to hide, and also I've got nothing to hide to say we're running a business here, and everyone should get paid for working. And it's awesome. So, just a question: how are ethics measured with the Vanguard Ethically Conscious International Shares Index ETF? So what's your kind of screening vibe, for want of a better word?
So this is part of our ESG agenda. Look, prior to this role, I was head of product strategy, and we had this amazing group of people where we built a lot of our funds and our ETFs offerings that we took to market. The ESG was one of the first things. So we spent a little bit of time talking about, what is ESG? Should it matter to the world? Should it matter to investors? Should Vanguard do something about it? And also, how do people think about it? So in that context, it's important for your listeners to understand ESG from a Vanguard perspective, we feel is manifested in three different ways. ESG is environmental, social, and governance issues manifested in your products, or it's also called responsible investing. So by virtue of Vanguard being a large index investor, in some ways it's quite an oxymoron, because we are we're seen as a passive investor, but because we are a long-term investor and we hold all of the stocks that an index holds, we have no option but to be active. And we call that investor stewardship, because what we do is we work with companies to just influence influence and engage the right kind of behaviors. So we're not going to just, they know that Vanguard is very different, that we're not going to go away. What we can do is vote proactively on the issues that matter. So investment stewardship aside, if people have the desire to reflect responsible investing in their own portfolios through ESG products, it's done broadly in three ways. One is an exclusionary-based approach, which means you're just removing a number of criteria that that you don't want your investments to reflect. So we've got a range of exclusionary funds. So we've taken a global equities index We've taken a global bonds index, we've taken an Australian index, and we've added an exclusionary layer on it. So things like alcohol, tobacco, fossil fuels, pornography, and a few other criteria. It's a pretty wide criteria. You won't get any exposure to that. And when I say you won't, the index provider, FTSE in our case, runs the index, just like an S&P or a...
You're just tracking index that's already been created.
We're tracking. And we work with these index providers to come up with the right methodology. And some of it is very formulaic. So if, for example, one of the criteria could be if a firm is getting more than 5 to 10% of their revenue from a certain criteria, that then FTSE would determine that maybe that is grounds
to exclude them.
Yeah. And we would then reflect that and replicate that. So, yeah, I think for our index approaches, we've done the exclusionary ones. We've just gone for the broadest set of exclusions in the exclusionary portfolio. There's the middle ground, which is inclusionary, which means you're not just getting your excluded stocks out. You're replacing that with stocks where you might have a positive view on it. Again, there's a lot of subjectivity. We're not really heavy in that space, but we're also looking at it.
Yeah.
And the final one is a very active oriented approach where you're very deliberately focusing on impact investing, you know, advancing women, or could be some very specific projects or criteria that you're trying to address. At this point in our time, we've got a number of products, and we've had billions of dollars going into this ESG pool of exclusionary assets. We will continue to look at the positive screening and the impact investing, but you know, we've gone for the broadest based. We're not here to try and voice for any one inclusion or exclusion over the other. Mm. We just believe that all products should be fundamentally diversified, should generate a real return over time, a return over inflation. Vanguard needs to satisfy itself that we can continue to offer that product at a very low cost over the long term, and that it will be used appropriately by clients.
It's fascinating, like this whole index investing and passive. I was just thinking, like the only true passive indexed type arrangement is one that tracks, for example, the top 200 companies or the top 300 companies of an exchange.
Yep.
That's weighted.
Yep.
Outside of that, because you can't actually control what goes on there, like the market controls that. But outside of that index, anyone who says, oh, this portfolio, this blended portfolio, it's an index fund, well, sure, it's a passive investment, quote unquote, but there's been an active choice of what allocation to put to growth. There's been an active choice what allocation to put to defensive.
Yep.
With an index of ethical or ethically conscious international shares, FTSE have made an active screening choice, right? Like
it's very methodology based.
Yeah.
And this is as a large scale index manager, we're very keen to make sure we satisfy ourselves of the methodology. Any product that we launch goes to the highest levels at Vanguard. We have a CEO and we have a thing called a global investment committee that looks at all product launches. And we these things are really clearly debated. So we won't launch anything unless we're comfortable with the methodology. But yeah, we're also seeing another trend in that a lot of people use index building blocks like an Aussie equity fund or an ETF or an international version of the same thing. And they're making an active choice in terms of the allocations to each of these index exposures. Yep. So the building block in itself is indexed, but the allocation has an active component. And we did some research on this, and we saw the use of active portfolio allocation increasing for both advisors and investors.
Well, it's funny, like in my book, I did a graph, and I think I plotted on that graph the Vanguard Diversified Balanced Fund 50-50, the Growth Fund 70-30, and the High Growth Fund 90-10. And I plotted the three, like, pricing, it was a price chart through COVID. And you can kind of see it's like when things are quote unquote normal, and most portfolios will do the same thing ish. But when there's a big event, that's when your risk profile, that's when your defensive portions will come in and smooth out the portfolio.
Absolutely.
So
even in our diversified high growth portfolio, and we got a few questions about this, it's got a small bond allocation. Mm. And people say, why do you have a bond allocation if it's a high growth? We fundamentally believe that bonds are like an insurance in a portfolio. Majority of your portfolio is invested in high growth equities, but we think having bonds acts as a nice little ballast. So when markets are going down, it just gives you that little bit of cushioning. So when things bounce back, you haven't gone down as deep, and the bonds act as give you that little bit of cushion.
Yeah, totally. Hey, let's talk about the Vanguard Personal Investor platform. Now, if you are new to all this stuff, I've mentioned at the top of the episode, I actually did a YouTube review of this just because I wanted to do that and use the concepts of a platform, and I used a live case study. We'll put a link in the show notes for those who haven't seen that. So that's what we're kind of talking about, and this is really in Balaji's remit in his role. Are you able to take us through maybe the features roadmap? Because people are asking about the Android app, the user interface, charts, performance reporting, like auto invest. Like, what's the roadmap?
Great. Maybe let me take a very quick step back.
Take three steps back. I just wanted to get all that out.
Awesome. So Vanguard Personal Investor was designed and built as part of a very strong retail strategy push. We wanted to build this direct relationship with retail investors who might choose to transact directly with Vanguard. We know there's hundreds of thousands of people who might already purchase our products through other avenues, but there is also a growing chorus of people who want to deal with Vanguard directly and purchase our products directly from us. So we created a Vanguard Personal Investors, essentially a platform that makes it easier for retail investors to access Vanguard products directly from Vanguard. So it was designed as a platform. It's a digital product offering. When I talk about the product offering, it's essentially a portal that you can sign up into, and it makes the process of investing very simple. From our perspective, right from the outset, we were very, very clear that Vanguard Personal Investor is not only a place to invest, it's a way to invest. And all the things we spoke about today about building good investing habits, that's essentially what we want to help build out for retail investors, which has led to us making a number of choices about what we do and don't offer on the platform. For example, we're quite comfortable that our products, we have quite a breadth of products that should be enough for almost all investors. Some people might have a different view. They might want something very esoteric. We wouldn't engage in that anyway. If it's good enough for a bulk of the advisors, we've got virtually most building blocks that make up the diversifieds. We think our products suite is compelling enough that people can just come in and buy directly from us. But again, we are very focused on building these really good investing habits. And we've made some deliberate choices around, we didn't want to publish short-term performance. Mm. If you go to certain platforms, for instance, it'll just give you a green up arrow, a red down arrow. And oftentimes, and I've seen this happen to the most sophisticated of investors, they react to that. And we don't want people to react. We think all investing should be for the long term. And we've created an experience doing that. That said, we will continue to build out our performance reporting suite. We will continue to invest in our tax reporting suite. You mentioned the Android app. We launched the Android app recently. We've just haven't gone as public with it, but it's there. So you can download it on
the Google Play or whatever it is.
On the Google Play. Sorry, I don't know what it's called. Yeah, I'm an iOS user. We've got a mob.
So am I, Balaji. So am I.
But apparently there's a bigger population of investors who use Android, which was news to me. But we've now got, the good news is we've got the mobile iOS app and the Android app. Again, we don't want people, just because you have an app, we don't think you should trade.
I don't have a super app on my phone. I don't have platform apps, investment apps. Yeah. Nope.
Exactly.
Don't need to do it because I'm an investor, not a freaking trader.
You're not exactly. in terms of the roadmap, which was part of your question, we recently launched a feature called Auto Invest for our funds. So if you just wanted to continually invest, which we think is the best way forward to invest and build good investing habits, we've launched that for our managed funds. And through Vanguard Personal Investor, you can get access to our managed funds, ETFs, and the top 300 Australian shares. We are now looking to offer that Auto Invest feature for ETFs. Now, if you were to purchase an ETF on our platform on a discrete basis, so on a standalone basis, there's a $9 brokerage, which is pretty common. But we're thinking about how can we offer a really compelling proposition. So if someone has a preference...
But just use the managed fund.
You can just use the managed fund. But some investors have a strong preference. We are agnostic, but we're just trying to create a mechanism where it makes it really compelling to buy these from Vanguard directly.
People get their freaking knickers in a knot around like, the tax differences with ETFs and managed funds. It's like, look, most of you are just starting out with your investing, and most of you might only have a few grand a year to just focus on understanding investments. If the time comes where you've got $1 million walking in the door and you need some tax planning, well, sort it out then. But these like 0.2% of intricacies that end up getting discussed in big details on online forums, like just chill out, everyone. Yep. Be an investor.
And the most important thing is whether you're going through a fund or an ETF, you're getting exactly the same exposure, the investment exposure. So a global equities fund and a global equities ETF gives you exactly the same exposure. Mm. Yeah, so an auto invest for ETFs is something in the works. We're launching trust accounts, again, for people who want to invest through that structure. We're also thinking about investing for children.
Mm.
That's something big, and it's plays so true to our mission. I've got three daughters, and I can't get them to invest, and I'd love to create something, not just for me, but for pretty much everyone in Australia, that they can just find it easy to invest. Again, we don't want them to trade, but to consistently build these investing habits and show them the power of compounding from a very young age. So these are some things coming up. We will continue to massively invest.
How many on your team on the Personal Investor who are working on this platform?
So we've got a combination. There's about 35, 40 people directly in my team.
Yeah.
And then you've got a dedicated technology team, a dedicated operations team, and a dedicated marketing team. And we have, and this is a retail business is very capital intensive to run. We also make substantial investments in cybersecurity, in compliance, in controls. You can't have a retail operation as a fly-by-night operation because this is, it's a long-term investment. And if you're trying to cut corners, it doesn't work. It doesn't work for any business, but even more so for retail.
I just wanted to point out to people, like, you know, if the minimum wage in Australia was $50,000, 50,000 times 40 people, as a minimum, there is significant investment with what you're wanting to do here.
Yeah,
absolutely. So this isn't some quick little startup. Like, you've got a clear mandate that you want to actually do this for the long term.
Totally.
Yeah.
The reporting is one we will continue to invest in.
Yeah.
And also, we will continue to make ongoing enhancements to the Personal Investor platform, but also everything across that matters to retail investors, on education, on, we already have Smart Investing, which is our newsletter. So I'd encourage your listeners to just, it's a great tool to just get educated on.
How do I sign up to that newsletter?
So it's just a link on our website. But it's just a great, whether you're starting out or whether you're a seasoned investor, there's a whole lot of research.
I might get Rach to add that in. Actually, and Rach, I'll send you the link, Rachel. My favorite chart of the year when I was an advisor was getting the index chart. Oh. It's fascinating. And we'll put a link in the show notes. It's basically since the beginning of time, it's like if you invested $10,000 in each asset class, it shows you what it's done. And then it's like tells you the key points of worldwide events, governments in the US, in Australia. It's fascinating.
It's one of the greatest charts. I was a big fan of it before I joined Vanguard. Yeah, almost all financial advisors just talk about it. And I'd encourage your listeners to have a look at it, but also have a look at the power of making ongoing contributions and the impact that it has over time.
Mm.
These are, it just brings home the point of investing habits that we spoke about.
Does your team have an investor focus group or someone? Like, do you have a team, like, do you have real world people who use your product that you do quarterly check-ins with for feedback on the ground?
Look, we'd love to get more and more feedback.
I can get some listeners who use VPI. Do you call it VPI?
We call it PI because we know we're V.
That's true.
But
smart guy. after this.
We'd love feedback.
I mean, yeah, I'm happy to put it out in the Facebook group or whatever if you legitimately use the product. And because it's interesting, like the questions in the Facebook group, when the people are like, we want this performance reporting, we want a better UI, we want charts and all this. These are hardcore fans and are hardcore investors.
Yep.
And their day job's probably in marketing or in IT or in bloody a cleaner or a hairdresser, like just run-of-the-mill people out there in people land. I reckon it's, if you want to do some type of investor feedback or something, like I'm happy to connect you.
We'd love that. And we can also make it a two-way thing where we're quite happy to share what's on our roadmap of things to come.
Yeah.
Because we want our investors to be invested in the enhancements we're making as well.
Oh, we'll take that offline. A question here. You've still got another 10 minutes, have you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I told Balaji you'll probably have a 40-minute chat, but here we go. Whatever. And this was actually a specific question that I wrote down. I forget her name, but she said, why should an investor who holds some Vanguard ETFs but also wants to invest in other things like LICs change to personal investor? So you mentioned the personal investor, like if I wanted to invest in the VDGR and then – you know, buy some Woolworths shares or CBA shares on that platform. You'll do all the tax reporting and whatnot. I can't buy LICs on your platform, can I?
No, you can't.
Okay.
Not right now, but it is an important one because, and I want to be careful about how I say this because LICs are listed investment companies. There are some really good ones or things that have, LICs that have been there for a very long time have you know, looked after their investors. But there's other newer ones. Sometimes they trade at a discount or a steep discount. So if the value of the portfolio is X, it trades at
Y.
X lower. Minus something, something, something. So we think ETFs are a mechanism where you have this, I don't want to get overly technical, but you've got these external market makers who are always looking to offer to make sure that the ETF is trading at its net asset value. And you want your portfolio being reflecting its value most of the time.
Mm.
With LICs, there's always the stopgap measures, which means in order to think about adding an LIC, we're making subjective decisions on what is good versus bad.
Mm.
That is not the game we want to play from our standpoint. We want large scale, low cost, diversified portfolios. So it's unlikely we'll add an LIC on our platform. We think ETFs are a great alternative, but I know some people have a preference for LICs.
And forgive me for my sins, Balaji, but I couldn't buy a competitor's ETF on your platform, could I?
No, not right now, because our offer, I mean, it's only been 2 years since we launched in the thick of COVID. At some point, we might think about, hey, if there is a product that meets our product design principles of low cost, diversified, used appropriately, and generates a real return over time, we might think about adding things if there is enough investor interest.
It's just this week, because this episode, we're recording it, I don't even know what the date is, the 8th of April or something. Like, this episode's going out in a couple of weeks. I think just this week, there was an article somewhere where there was an ETF created and they're closing it because there wasn't enough interest and inflows. Mm. And that's a real risk.
Absolutely.
So, and I think as a responsible organization, you know, sure that things on your platform. So if someone bought CBA shares or Woolworth shares on your PI platform, you don't control those.
We don't.
But it's a, we know that it's top 200 blue chip. There's a very small chance of it getting wiped off the face of the earth and then causing issues for your customers.
Yeah. And then if we believed that, we would have launched that product anywhere, a low-cost diversified product. And also it's important that we will, it's very, very unlikely that we will look at something very niche. Oftentimes we get questions about, hey, crypto ETFs and things like that. I think it's worthwhile just spending a little bit of time on it because product development is sacrosanct at Vanguard. And I, as I said, it's probably the, every product gets looked at very, very seriously.
Hey, everyone, just while you're talking there, Balaji, on page, remember in my book where I, here we go, everyone found it. Everyone, page 360 of my book, there's a quote. A long-term portfolio should be comprised of stocks, bonds, and cash. We're quite happy to sit this one out, and we urge investors to be very wary of the risks of cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrencies defy any kind of categorization at the moment. And that was a quote by Balaji Gopal to the AFR on the 25th of May 2001. You're the man who quoted, I quoted in my book.
Well, thank you. And let me give you some context to that. And I think that was in response to whether Vanguard would launch the crypto ETF.
Yeah.
And our view is product development is very important to us. We're never going to be investing in anything that we consider a fad. For example, for the past however many years, you know, people come in and talk to us about, hey, can you launch a gold ETF or a commodity ETF? We don't do commodity ETFs. We don't do currency ETFs. Again, it doesn't meet our core principle of generating a real return over time. For example, if you take gold as an example, gold doesn't produce something. I'm not here to tell you about whether gold is a good investment or not. Gold doesn't produce any income of its kind. I know many people use it as a great hedge, and I'm not taking that away from them. I'm only talking about why we won't launch a product for a commodity. So if it doesn't produce something, then the value of that particular asset class has some subjectivity to it, which means you're speculating that it will do something in the future without too much basis. So that in itself is not a good reason for us to launch a gold ETF or a silver ETF. We don't do that.
Yeah, well, you don't have a Forex ETF.
We don't have that. And the same theory applies to cryptocurrency because that meets the same thing. Now, it defies any categorization from the standpoint of it doesn't generate an income. We can't satisfy ourselves that it can produce an income of some kind. There's also a separation of, when you talk about cryptocurrencies, there's the blockchain technology and the cryptocurrencies themselves. We believe in that technology over the long term. I think blockchain is an important one. We're doing some pilots ourselves in terms of how that technology can be used. But in terms of crypto as an asset class, it's not something we are likely to do in terms of building a product or offering crypto trading. And we continue to urge investors that think about it in the context of your overall portfolio. Yeah, if you want to just dabble in a little bit of it yourself for speculative reasons, that's an investor's prerogative. It's not something we endorse. But again, if an investor is, I mean, you hear horror stories of people who've just taken their entire SMSF and put it all into crypto. We want to educate against that. And we didn't want to enable it by, not that we would have ever created that product, but we would never want to put investors in that position of, and sometimes just because Vanguard's offered a product offers some legitimacy to it. And it's something we want to just sit out of.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. Like even we're talking about Vanguard ETFs, Vanguard managed funds, Vanguard personal investor. We're on the podcast today. We talk about heaps of different products all through the year of, you know, I want to say loud and clear, not everything is for everyone. And we've got to be okay with that.
Yep.
Like it's as simple as that. But anyway, let's I forgot to ask you one thing. What's the deal with Vanguard Super?
Super is a massive, massive undertaking for us. We're launching a super fund from scratch. Again, it's very much part of our direct retail strategy for going directly to end investors and advisors. We've spent the last 2 and a bit years. We've built a massive team of people to build it. Look, we don't have a launch date yet, but we're pretty close. There's a number of hurdles we need to get through. When I say we're pretty close in terms of the product design and everything, we've done a ton of work internally, a lot of the experience work. We don't have a launch date just yet. There is a lot of interest, quite understandably, in our Vanguard Super offering. And we'd love to launch it as soon as possible. But again, we will only launch it once we're fully comfortable with it. But we're very excited.
Is Vanguard the trustee, or are you outsourcing that?
No, we are building. We're doing this the right way and the hard way, which is we're not outsourcing. It's unlikely we would have ever done that. We will be our own trustee.
Yep, cool.
And we wouldn't outsource it, and it would be you get all of the things that you expect from a firm like Vanguard for a superannuation offering. It's a highly regulated product, and we will conform with everything that is expected of us, plus some of our own standards that we overlay.
Can you talk more about it? Can I ask you, you know, without giving state secrets, will there be, you know, just three bread and butter portfolios, or is it off the work that you've done on the personal investor platform where people might be able to choose some percentages of direct equities? Can I build my own portfolio of ETFs, or is it just diversify? Is it just three funds only? Is there a pension product in there yet?
Look, that's going down to the next level. I don't feel now is the time
Me
to do it. But what I can say is we've got a substantial 401k business in the US serving, you know, millions of clients. We want to bring some of our best thinking into the mix. It'll be a very Vanguard-oriented offer. But in terms of the personal investor and the superannuation, what we are very keen on and intently trying to create is a single experience for you, both non-super and super. The super is a very different product to personal investor, but we want the experience for a retail investor or an advice client to be able to see that in the one experience, so long as they have transacted directly with Vanguard for their personal investor and super. Mm. Over time, we might expand and extend that to see, can we just consolidate a report with super and non-super to the extent it's possible.
Yep.
But our view is we want to create that, you know, whole of wealth view in the one digital experience. And that's something that we've worked on and we'll continue to work on.
Okay. So I'd imagine, you know, in the near future, around next year maybe, should possibly be in market.
Yes. I don't know. But
yeah, I know.
I'm not committing to a time.
No.
We're angling to get it down.
Is the superannuation in your remit?
No, because my colleague, Michael Lovett, runs superannuation.
Yeah. Oh, we won't speculate on his behalf.
Always. At some point, it might be great for you to speak with Michael as well.
Yeah, be more than happy to. Balaji, we have gone well over time, and I really appreciate that. But is there anything that you want to get across that perhaps I didn't ask you or that we didn't talk about?
I think I'd want to just double down and leave your listeners with just what is most important, which is all we're trying to do at Vanguard is to build really good investing habits. In a superannuation sense, it's very much mandated. But for investments that people choose to make, it's don't get caught up in the market noise. Stay true to your goals and the habits that you've created. And don't react adversely. All investing should be for the long term. I think if people have started the journey, it's fantastic. Stay the course. Continue to invest. Automate your investing habits. If you haven't started, it's never too late to start. And if you're an established investor, you know, watch this space, because the retail space is where we really want to play in, and we'll be coming with a lot of information, education, learning, and product solutions that'll meet their need over time. So, hey, it was a fascinating discussion.
Yeah, we covered a lot. And we'll put a link in the show notes to my review of the Personal Investor platform on YouTube if you haven't seen that. And it will just help you understand the concepts of platforms, because the wild thing, Glaji, Vanguard is a platform and an investment product.
Yep.
And not all platforms are investing products, and not all investment products have a platform.
That's right.
So if you're new to all this stuff, it can be confusing, right?
Yep.
And then we'll put a link to the to my favorite index chart as well in the show notes. But Balaji Gopal, Head of Personal Investor Australia here at Vanguard, thank you so much for joining us on My Millennial Money.
Great to be here. Thank you.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
My Millennial Money supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you would like some other giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Cymo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.